At this time, each Sunday afternoon, the National Broadcasting Company presents on-the-spot news reports from Europe. Immediately following today's reports, you will hear the distinguished commentator, H.V. Kaltenborn. First, NBC reports from Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Warren Irvin in Berlin. Most of you probably have your own opinions about the responsibility for this war, but if the German press may be taken as a criterion, German opinion in that respect is still in a state of flux. Last September, when I first came to Berlin, I got accustomed to reading in the newspapers that it was all England's fault. Then came a day when the blame was shifted, or part of it at least, to the shoulders of France. But last night, I was amazed to learn from a headline in the Nachtausgabe, I quote the headline, USA war guilt documents hit like a bomb. And, strangely enough, I awoke this morning to learn that the Jews are really the ones responsible. For instance, the headline in today's Morgenpost reads, How the Jews in the USA agitated for war. And the headline in the Berliner Börsen-Zeitung reads, Emigrants and Jews as war agitators. However, the headline in the official Nazi organ, the Völkische Beobachter, is more conservative. It merely says, Secret report of Polish ambassador in Washington reveals Jews' determination to wage war. You've probably guessed already that these are headlines appearing above articles dealing with the 16 documents published in the recent German White Book. From the same German papers, I learned that certain radio commentators in the United States have challenged the authenticity of these documents. Well, on that score, I have nothing to say. Nazi officials insist that they are genuine. The chief interest in these documents, so far as the United States is concerned, centers, as you know, around three of them purporting to be reports sent to the Polish Foreign Office in January 1939 by Count Potocki, the Polish ambassador in Washington. All three reports quote statements Mr. Bullitt is alleged to have made to Count Potocki in the course of a conversation or conversations they had in Washington. But there are other reports concerning Ambassador Kennedy. If we are to believe the German papers, you've all been shocked to learn of these disclosures, though you're still too much dazed for the German correspondents in the States to get a clear picture of your reactions. Nevertheless, the documents have established beyond a doubt the war guilt of Germany's enemies, that is to say, the plutocratian upper strata in the three great democracies, meaning ourselves, Britain, and France. If you don't belong in those plutocratian upper strata, why, consider yourselves exonerated. The German papers are obviously sniping at Secretary Hull, or perhaps the President, when they demand, did Bullitt make his own war policy? And are deriving equally obvious satisfaction in a report from Washington that Representative Hamilton Fish is advocating an immediate airing of the whole question by the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee. In fact, he is even quoted as saying that if President Roosevelt with the Allies, then formal charges should be lodged against him. Posters on billboards throughout Berlin announced that four men were put to death yesterday for high treason, or in other words, espionage. Two others also were executed, one for burglary and the other for murder, making a total of six for the day. Today's communique of the German High Command announces encounters between German and Allied patrols north of Saargemund, in which, it says, the German patrols made several prisoners. There is no mention of German losses. Beginning at 2 o'clock tomorrow morning, clocks throughout Germany will be advanced 1 hour, as the country goes on daylight savings time. This is Warren Irvin in Berlin, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company.
The report just heard came from Berlin. Now you are to hear from NBC staff reporter in Paris.
State of Paris at 9:30 in the evening. Several subjects of interest are taken up by Paris editorials today. But one of the most widely commented is still Monsieur Molotov's speech on Friday. Wherein a certain purpose point out, he celebrated the neutrality of Russia so very soon after the Soviet aggression on Poland and Finland. Other editorials stress the fact that Berger has been very useful to German aims so far. One leader of the Socialist Party in France openly accuses the Soviets of having desired a war in Europe and of having, on several occasions, attempted through their agents to draw France into a war. First over the Spanish drama, then over Czechoslovakia, finally over Poland. The Romanzoni, a well-known political commentator, believes that in 30 or 40 years, perhaps, Russia and Germany may come to loggerheads. But that for the present, the solidarity of Berlin and Moscow are obvious. Another commentator shares that opinion and points out what to him was the most interesting passage in the Molotov speech. That in which the Russian Foreign Affairs Minister stigmatized Allied activities in the Near East and gave warning that Russia was prepared to bar their way. Nevertheless, the general trend of editorials warns the French public not to divert all its attention towards Russia. This attention must be concentrated on one purpose, says the newspaper Paris Midi, that of defeating Germany. And it concludes, quote, Stalin is obviously trying to avoid a quarrel with the rest of the world, unquote. Two other subjects of interest are featured in the front pages of the Paris Press. Mr. Winston Churchill's speech yesterday, which is printed in extenso, and the publication of the White Book in Berlin. Well-informed circles in France believe that the White Book was published with a threefold purpose. First, to influence the election campaign in America. Second, to furnish isolationists in the United States with strong arguments for non-intervention in European affairs. Third, the fact that the Wilhelm Strasse has waited the return of Mr. Sumner Wells to Washington to issue the book would indicate, according to well-informed neutral sources, that the leaders of the Reich are irritated that the United States would not intervene for a piece of compromise. Nevertheless, the general reaction in France to the publication of the White Book is reflected in the headline of Paris Soir. The White Book, says the paper, was issued on March 29. It was issued 3 days too soon. Meanwhile in Paris, a war committee convened at the Élysée Palace yesterday afternoon to learn the decision taken at the Supreme War Council held in London last week. Now, in order to clear up the conclusion which arises as to the purpose and identity of the different committees created by the war, the press of Paris points out and explains four different committees which are often mentioned in the papers. The Supreme Council, the War Committee, the War Cabinet, and the Secret Committee. First is the Supreme War Council. The purpose of this council is to bring together Allied political leaders and military chiefs for a discussion of all questions pertaining to the prosecution of the war. Today, 6 meetings of the Supreme Council have been held. Free in England and free in France. The War Committee, presided by President Lebrun, is entirely French and consists of the Ministers of National Defense and the General in Command of Land, Naval, and Aerial Forces. It is this War Committee that met yesterday for the fifth time since the start of the war. In September, after the defeat of Poland, it was this committee again which decided to change an attitude of military offensive to one of defensive. Once the Finland was voted by this war committee, it determined all operations that military units must carry out after it. Now, the War Cabinet is quite another thing. The War Cabinet was created by Premier Paul Reynolds and contains only those members of the government whose departments are directly related to matters of war. Here we find the Minister of Foreign Affairs, the War, Navy, Aviation Minister, the Minister of Economy, the Minister of Defense and Economy, the Minister of Armaments, of Finance, and finally of Foreign Trade. This reduced war cabinet meets in Tangier to control the general conduction of the war. Finally, there are the secret committees or secret sessions of the Chamber or of the Senate. In the last war, 10 secret sessions were held in all. Since the beginning of this war, 3 have already been held, 1 at the Senate and 2 at the Chamber. I now return you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
You have just heard a report from Paris. NBC reports now from London.
This is London. There is a definite and unmistakable note of confidence in London tonight for the first time in several weeks. Ever since the end of the Russo-Finnish War, London has been depressed. Even in official quarters, the ancient British confidence has been less apparent. This feeling was due, no doubt, to the belief that it was going to be difficult for the Allies to bring their great economic and material advantages to America for free energy. But in the past few days, the old confidence has returned, and it is especially noticeable in today's papers. The reason for this sudden optimism is that from both the Quai d'Orsay in Paris and from Downing Street, there are signs of great activity. There's a general feeling that the Allies, for the first time, are determined to accept this war as a great test of strength, and to wage war without looking first at all the rumors and implications of international war. This does not mean that the Allies are now prepared to abandon all law and fight as they please. But it does mean that from now on, the Allies are not going to allow the neutrals to adopt one attitude towards Britain and France, and another attitude towards Germany. In the British view, the neutrals have been definitely unfair to both Britain and France. The neutrals have, according to officials here, set up one standard of conduct for Germany and a totally different standard for the Allies. They have, in other words, allowed Germany to get away with murder while condemning the Allies of the slightest misdemeanor. Now, say the Allies, it's time for all that to stop. And within the next few days, all observers here believe that the Allies will begin to tighten the blockade around Germany, even if by so doing they squeeze Germany's neighbors. One of the questions to which much attention is to be given immediately is that of re-exports by neutrals of essential war materials to Germany. It has been known by officials of the Ministry of Economic Warfare here that for some time the neutrals surrounding Germany, and especially Poland and Italy, have been shipping war material on capacity. And there's a growing body of opinion here which believes that the time has come to stop this, even if it means rationing the neutrals. It is also expected that the Allies will soon ask the United States to take action against American firms who are shipping war material to Russia, material which the Allies believe is being shipped on to Germany. British envoys from all Central and Southeastern European countries will start arriving here this week for consultation with Mr. Chamberlain and Lord Halifax. And at the same time, it is expected that the Prime Minister may soon announce a few cabinet changes. It is believed that the arrival of the British Balkan ministers may be the opening shot in the new blockade war. The death of Sir John Gilmore, the Minister of Shipping, will necessitate the appointment of a new minister to this post. And it is believed that the Prime Minister may at the same time make several other changes, though nothing sensational is expected. Incidentally, Sir Arthur Salter is expected to be appointed Minister of Shipping. A single plane is believed to have downed a German Dornier freighter far out over the North Sea today. When last seen by the British pilots, the Nazi plane was flying low over the water in a disabled condition. The British Spitfire, with one other fighter from the same squadron, was on patrol shortly after noon east of the Suffolk coast. The pilot, 15,000 feet up, sighted the German aircraft 1,000 feet below him. Slipping a stone to Dornier, he fired two bursts of machine gun bullets. The German pilot stalled and went into a steep dive of about 15,000 feet from the sea level. Flattened out and flew east with black smoke pouring from its starboard engine and with the starboard wing down. The first batch of the Czech Volunteer Army recruited in London are to leave for service in France shortly. The volunteers first on the call-up list have already received instructions to prepare for departure. They are, for the most part, unmarried men. Outbreak of war, they have been offering to fight for their adopted country, registering their names with the Czech National Party in London. For them, it will be equivalent to a continuation of their service in the old Czechoslovak army. They will preserve their national character and their former ranks while being assimilated into the Allied forces. This is London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
This afternoon's reports from European capitals originated with NBC staff reporters in Berlin, Paris, and London. And now the National Broadcasting Company presents Mr. H.V. Kaltenborn, celebrated news analyst who will be heard over many of these stations from time to time during the European war. Mr. Kaltenborn.
Good afternoon, everybody. Warren Irwin tells us from Berlin that the documents published in the German White Paper with reference to diplomatic activity on the part of Mr. Bullitt and Mr. Kennedy and the naval attaché in Lisbon, Portugal, hit by a bomb. That's the reaction which in America we are supposed to have had to this German white paper. And the Morgenpost of Berlin heads its account how the Jews in the United States agitated for war.